funds and any interest earned. However, no payments from the Racing Commission have been required since 1977. The interest earnings on these investments amount to over $130,000 per year, and the debt service on the bonds is only $75,000 a year, leaving an excess of $55,000 per year available for an alternative use. What this bill does is lets the veterinary medicine facility there use $55,000 for their isolation lab rather than just simply lose those funds altogether. We recommended approval of that.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Curley.
Did the committee make any change in the bill that as it came out of the Senate Education Committee?
I don't believe there were any amendments to the bill. Mr. Chair,
there was, I think in response to your question, however, there wasn't a change in the bill, but my recollection was that there was some understanding on the reporting of those funds for the purposes of...
There was to be a, that's right, we added that they should report what they do with those funds to the legislature or the appropriate body. That was added on the budget note.
That's
not
a budget note.
That's a budget
note. How will they do that?
Carefully, I hope, but let's see.
Accurately.
But the process, anyway, that's fine. Because I thought we'd done a good job in the Senate Education Committee with it, but we don't have the power to write budget notes, that's true.
There was no amendments made since the last Senate amendments made March 23rd, so the bill is in good order. The main thing was, and I thought we had put that in on that, but I don't...
You don't see it?
I guess that Senator Crowe, a representative from Higher Education, made it clear that they would, as a part of their normal budgeting and reporting, indicate how those funds are used.
That should be added to the budget note right here, that they're...
Mr. Chairman,
that was said in the hallway, and I'm sure it will happen. The point is that there is a need to make sure that they're used for the purpose that they are.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the way the bill is structured, that the monies are made available to the State Board of Higher Education for these purposes and would be routinely accounted for under the research grant and contract part of the higher education budget. So if the money is going to be there and everybody will see exactly what happens to it.
Okay, so you didn't need to do that in the Senate. As the bill came from the Senate, it would have provided that
yes,
anyway.
Sir.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's. Shall we get this passed, Cliff?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I'm ready. House Bill 2099, call the roll on the motion that do pass.
Representatives Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Metzke.
Aye.
Speaker Gap.
Aye.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Roberts.
Aye.
Cannon.
Aye.
Crow.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Karen.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Votes aye. Motion carried. Next and final bill is House Bill 3019 relating to the Deschutes River. Senator Wires.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 3019 creates the Deschutes River Scenic Waterway Recreation Area Management Committee. The purpose of the committee is to assist in the development of a management plan for the lower 100 miles of the Deschutes River, which minimizes the conflict between various user groups and landowners. It will be a 9-member group made up of by the governor of one person from the commercial Deschutes River non-commercial boaters, one from the Deschutes River sports fishermen. I don't know how that got by legislative council. They've got men in there. The Deschutes River permitted outfitters, Deschutes River area land-based users, campers, hikers, one private landowner in the Deschutes River area, somebody from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Spring Indian Reservation Tribal Council, an elected city or county official from Wasco, Sherman, or Jefferson County, a member of the general public at large, and a legislative liaison. Section 11.1AD says that they shall consider implementation of a user fee system for the recreation area. I think we should be aware of that. That's considered. The amendments to the bill provide a separate expenditure limitation within the park's budget of $10,000 for committee expenses, specify that the management plan is directed at the lower 100 miles, notwithstanding a measure which would expand scenic status to upper portion of the river and sunset the committee June 30, 1991. In addition to the committee expenses, the Parks Division will redirect the Deschutes River program expenditures of up to $68,000 to provide staff and support to the management plan. I urge your support.
Question?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I was wondering if Senator Wiresbe opposed an amendment. I haven't noticed one bill this session on a river commission that we usually get. Maybe it's lost, but...
It's not in the budget.
Well, I was wondering if we could perhaps amend it in. I mean, we've got to have respect for history here.
Well, someone talked about that in subcommittee, and they said that they had checked with the only surviving original member of the Lottery Commission, and that he has given his blessing to the demise of the Rogue Rivers.
Oh, okay. I was wondering. I just wanted to make sure we have paid our dues. You may continue.
That was taken care of.
It's being funded with lottery funds now, so.
Outside
points.
Before anything else happens, call the roll in the motion, right, please.
Representative Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Representative Kopetsky, would you care to vote?
Aye.
Aye.
Kat. Representative aye. Gilmore. Senator
aye.
Robert
aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Trove.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Karen.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Votes aye.
Motion carried. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Yee, pardon me.
With the board's, Ways and Means Committee's permission, I want to change my yes vote to no for Senate Bill 617.
Is there objection to that request? Hearing none.
Will it change the outcome of the vote?
I don't think so, sir. It passed unanimously. Sorry.
Announcements?
Subcommittee
is planning to meet. On Economic Development and Natural Resources, we'll meet briefly.
Transportation will meet.
All right. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
Ways and Means, full committee, June 10th, 1987, Hearing Room F. 2:45 p.m., Representative Gilmore presiding.
We're going to get started. Ways and Means of June 10th will come to order. We have some things on the agenda. The House has session in a few minutes. I'm sure there won't be any difficulty getting through if we can all stick to the agenda. We'll start out by Senator Wires. Are you prepared to discuss the Senate Bill 13 relating to radioactive waste?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I certainly am. This measure creates an Oregon Hanford Waste Board with state agency, public, and legislative membership to coordinate the state's position relative to the siting of a high-level nuclear waste repository in Hanford. The amendments established another funds expenditure limitation for the board in the amount of $141,222, which shall be paid by contracts from federal site evaluation funds received by the Department of Energy. Additional funding may also be received from the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. The Department of Energy will also provide clerical support to the board. This is us doing something concrete and lasting to be involved in this and in follow-up of the measure that was passed by the voters of the state, having been referred by the legislature this session. And Representative McCracken is done a lot of work on this through his subcommittee. I urge an aye vote.
Any further discussions? Senate Bill 13.
Senators Meeker.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Crowe.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Gee.
Aye.
Karen.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Representatives Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Aye. Senate Bill 13 will report to the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senate Bill 412 relating to the humanities, Representative Van Vliet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the bill that for the Oregon Committee of the Humanities, an organization that for the last 16 years has played a very vital part in the life of a lot of our communities and throughout the state. The members of the subcommittee were of the opinion that because of the wide level of support for this agency and the diversity and quality of the programs that they offer, that state fiscal support was warranted. However, the amended bill appropriates $1 and provides the agency an opportunity to request additional funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities, and if successful, can seek additional matching monies from the emergency board sometime in the near future. And it keeps this organization as a vital part of the state. Recommend your approval.
Is there further discussion on this motion? Rick, would you call the roll, please?
Senators Meeker.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Trowe.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Karen.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Representatives Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Aye. And Senate Bill 412 will report due pass the Senate floor. Senate Bill 719. Senator Roberts, please.
Mr. Chairman, current law prohibits foster care payments from the state to any relative of a child. Under federal and tribal law, the first choice for foster care for a child when it's needed are relatives, so as to reflect the tribal customs and heritage and to enhance the child as they grow up in a cultural setting that is consistent with their Indian culture. Senate Bill 719 would allow the Children's Services Division to make foster care payments to a family that is caring for the child of a relative if that child is Indian. It's a situation in which the typical Indian community is in many respects an extended family, and to not permit payment for foster care to such a relative would make it very difficult in many cases to place a child in a foster home close to their other relatives, friends, and their community. The bill provides for a $98,707 general fund appropriation and a $24,494 other funds expenditure limitation increase to the Children's Service Division for foster care payments during the 1987-89 biennium. And I would support the adoption of this bill, reference to the floor.
Thank you very much, Frank. I think there needs to be a little more clarification. You have some questions relating to clarification.
Senator Roberts, I'm about the subcommittee I'm on, but I don't remember the bill that well. But the obvious question here, I think, is an excellent bill, excellent policy. But the obvious question, why just Indians?
The specific reference to Indians is because of federal law, the Indian Child Welfare Act, which provides this special legal status for Indian tribes and their members, and with reference to foster children. And so that's why it was specifically implied here.
Well, my point is, you know, I think it's a good policy, but
well, all I can say,
what if it's just an ordinary, non-Indian family in the same situation?
Because I would say that generally we have assumed that if a child goes in, let's say, to the family of an aunt and uncle or a cousin or a grandparent, that is normally thought of as being something within the family, and there is no reason why the state should then place that child as a and create a foster home in which, let's say, the uncle or the aunt is the foster parent, and then pay that foster parent to take care of the child. Within our society, we've normally assumed those kind of family responsibilities.
Yeah, I realize that, but I mean,
I can't argue the point. Yeah. I'm just saying that this bill was enacted specifically, and this extension of funds was enacted specifically because it was felt necessary for it to comply with the special status of Indian children under federal law.
But this, let me just back it, this ability to make foster parent payments, not phrasing it well, I'm sure, this ability to make these parents will only be available for Indian children, mm-hmm. not be available for non-Indian children?
That's correct.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might speak to the bill,
go ahead.
I'm sure that the advocates of this bill aren't going to like it, but it seems to me it'd be blatantly unconstitutional, and I'll have to vote against it. I think it's a wonderful bill, but the fact that you would extend this to one class of citizens, it's a good benefit. The fact you'd extend this to one class of citizens and not another class of citizens, based upon status, and this Indian status to me just seems to be, inequitable and inapplicable and unconstitutional.
Mr. Chairman, let me just comment that that the federal law now exists, which specifically extends this right to children in Indian tribes, recognized Indian tribes. It does not extend this privilege to any other resident of the United States. So it may be that the federal law is unconstitutional.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thorne first.
Mr. Chairman, it was a bill that was heard by the Human Resources Subcommittee, which I know you're a member, Representative Mason, and the amendments clearly on Section 2, if you want to flip the agenda, indicate that this is in response to Public Law 95-608. And to defend what Senator Roberts is saying, and realizing time is rather short, we have provided resources available to meet the spirit of that act and purely say if it's unconstitutional, the whole thing is declared null and void. We can't argue the point that you make relative to all other members of society, but the fact is the federal government has chosen to do this, and we've been encouraged to at least comply with that federal law.
There's a different status.
Just Representative Kopetsky next.
Just a quick comment to ease, in addition to what Senator Thorne has said, that in the same spirit that the federal Congress is able to pass the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act, we're recognizing a culturally distinct and in some instances disadvantaged group. This is, I think, tightly drawn to limited to tribal members. And so in the policy committee, the Human Resource Policy Committee, not the Ways and Means Subcommittee, but the Policy Committee, chose or presented to the Ways and Means Committee limiting this to Indian children. And so that was what was before us, and I think we can make a strong argument that we are in the same spirit in terms of passing this provision as federal Congress was in passing theirs. We're trying to, unlike a quote-unquote assimilated white child, whether their family, their heritage may be Irish or Polish, there is a greater assimilation of a white culture than as opposed to the Indian culture, and the tribe, what we're attempting to do is to preserve that cultural heritage.
Well, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I don't care what you say, under constitutional law, race is a suspect category, period. That's just the way it is, and you can't extend benefits to from one category and not to another unless you have an overriding state interest. That's constitutional law.
Please accept this in a constructive fashion. Write your congressman. Rick, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was there more discussion?
Senator Wires? I just wanted to say that when Senator Roberts does things that are unconstitutional, he doesn't do them that are blatantly unconstitutional. He does them that are patently unconstitutional.
Senator Meeker, I'm...
Mr. Chairman, I suppose we're beating a dead horse here, but it seems to me that the U.S. Constitution has looked a little bit differently on people of Indian heritage, mainly because we have entered into treaty agreements with them. We have done a whole host of things that are totally different than any other race, and the Constitution has recognized all of that. So I think that that's one of the bases that the Congress has acted here. We've very clearly tried to protect any constitutional differences. I don't see a problem with the bill.
Call roll, Rick, please.
Senators Meeker.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Trove.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Kerens.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Representatives Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
No.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Aye. And Senate Bill 719 will report to the Senate with a due pass recommendation. House Bill 2644, Representative Mason, please.
Thank you. During the 1983 session of the Commission on the Judicial Branch, approved two financial transactions which were subsequently questioned by the state auditor. The disputed claims involved liquidation of unused leave for an employee and the final payment to a contract consultant. House Bill 2644 repairs the technical audit questions and legalizes the payments of the disputed claims. A series of accounting entries requiring repayment and reappropriation are necessary because of the lapse between fiscal and fiscal biennium. The original bill was incorrectly drafted, introduced with an appropriation included dollars and odd cents. The amendment simply rounds the amount nearest even dollars. Essentially, this bill makes up a technical error that was made by the Commission on the Judicial Branch when debt was owed in one biennium and paid in another. The Commission lapsed for a while. It was sunsetted, so there was no continuity there, and the debts came in.
Further discussion on this bill? It's an auditor's bill. Rick, would you call the roll, please?
Senators Meeker.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Trove.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Karen.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Representatives Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Aye. And House Bill 2644 will report to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. House Bill 3381. Senator Hannon, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members. House Bill 3381 deals with the new creation of the Finance and Insurance Division that used to be called the Department of Commerce. Yesterday afternoon, we amended some new amendments in the bill. We felt that they would be ready today. Unfortunately, the amendments were not totally prepared, and I'd like to move that we send this back to the Subcommittee on Public Safety so as we can hold this until such time as we have the proper amendments.
Okay, I'll take an oral, I'll take that as a motion. Senator Hannah moves this bill back to subcommittee at least for a length of time until the amendments are in proper fashion to be prepared to full. Is there any vocal objection to that motion?
It's not killing.
Hearing none, it will be returned to the subcommittee. We'll move on to House Bill 3383. Representative Jones, please.
Thank you. This is the budget for the Lakeview Uranium Mill Tailings Project. And as some of you are familiar with, there was a suit filed to stop the removal of those tailings from one pile to another. And that's about half done. And this would provide them the necessary authority to go ahead and put it all in one pile. Of course, the second part of it is the committee amendments remove provisions added to the measure to pay the legal expenses of the litigant who challenged the lack of a siting certificate and the requirement that the council adopt rules to implement ballot measure 9 by January 1, 1988. These provisions were added following the House approval of the measure. I think that that we should go ahead and pass this measure.
Is there further discussion?
Yes,
Senator Kerens.
Mr. Chairman, as soon as the committee has concluded its business, where the Senate went into session at 3 o'clock, I'm going to go up and collect my bets on this bill. Because when it was referred here, all of the argument was over Section 3, the so-called Marbet Amendment, although his name was never used in the debate on the Senate floor, as the Senate members will recall, all of the argument was over whether a group or individual should have their attorney's fees mandated by statute. And I said to many members of the Senate, I said, I will bet you real money that when this bill returns to the floor, that Section 4 will be missing. And I see that while the bill came down to the Ways and Means Committee with specific instructions regarding Section 3, apparently the scalpel slipped and took out two additional lines known as Section 4, so that this committee will now go on record as saying, we don't care if FSAC ever writes rules regarding the implementation of Ballot Measure 9 successfully passed by the people of this state in November 1984, and we simply are going to continue the lack of implementation of the people's legislative initiative. So I'm going to, as soon as we're done, I'll go upstairs and collect my money, and the other people will say, gee, I thought you were cynic, but you were just a realist.
Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion. Representative McCracken.
For the information of the committee, the issue of requiring the Department of Energy and FSEC to write rules to implement Measure 9 was discussed. They said they would do it, that they had sufficient statutory authority, did not want it tangled up into this bill, did not want to have any further delays in making the two piles one pile. So we did discuss it, address the issue.
I understand that, Mr. Chairman, and I wasn't calling anybody's actions into question. I'm just saying that my powers as a prognosticator have been confirmed.
Clairvoyancy.
No, a little more than clairvoyance. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meeker, further discussion.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't remember the Senate discussing any kind of specific instructions to this committee as to what its purview might be, nor was I at any time when I voted under any belief that this committee didn't have the prerogative that any other committee would have without instructions. And I just don't see that that's a problem.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meeker, I didn't say that it was a problem, didn't say it was beyond the prerogative of this committee. I was just pointing out that in the entire rather heated debate, as you'll recall,
yes,
that the all of the thumping was on this unnamed individual or group, and there was not one word in debate on the motion to refer that ever touched on the question of these rules. And it was at that point that I mentioned to a number of members of the Senate that, in fact, this bill would return without the rulemaking requirement in it. And they said, how could you think that? And I said, you wait, the bill will return.
Mr. Chairman,
I have said nothing more than that.
One final comment, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad they took out the part about whose lawyer got paid, because I really didn't like that part of it.
In closing, Representative Jones.
In closing, Mr. Chairman, regardless of what's been said, it still applies from one pile to the other.
It does now.
Quick call the roll, please.
Senators Meeker.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Trow.
Aye.
Liars.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Kerens.
No.
Thorne.
Aye.
Representative Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
No.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Aye.
No. Presiding Chair.
Aye. And House Bill 3383 will report out to the House floor as amended. Bills that have been re-referred because of failure to pass. And after further consultation by subcommittee, have reported back for another try. House Bill 2329. Representative Jones, the compromise, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is an interesting little bill that's been around, and the other representative that tried it to run into a snowbank or a mud hole or something up there on the floor, and so now they're going to try it in another place here. However, it has been amended a little bit, and what we recommended was that the categories of expenses would be increased by the amount of 20%, rounded to the nearest upper dollar, except for the one instructional permits, which 20% would have made it $2.20, so we went down 20 cents on it. And that's what the amendments are to 2329. It provides somewhere in the neighborhood of about $8 million. It's still about $3 million short of what the necessary funds are to make it whole. But this is just a fact of life because it didn't work the other way, so we're going to try it this way.
Yes. Senator Trump, please.
Right. I think what we're sending out is bad policy. And I think that we have before always tried basically to collect as much in fees as the services cost. Last time, admittedly, when the bill went forward, it collected a bit more than that. And so when we got it back, we did look at that. We did have proposals that would have reduced it down so that the amount of subsidy coming from the gas tax, the registration pot of money, would not have been nearly $3 million. It's going to have to be what this proposal would have been, something like $300,000. And we had proposals to do that. We couldn't get the votes.
This is really well planned out. I think it deals with the recommendations and suggestions of the governor and Mr. Stan Long, the current director of Department of Commerce, and his staff, and I think it's a lot of deliberation work has gone into it, and I would highly recommend it. I would like to add one other thing before we take a roll call vote, so as I can be on record, potential conflict of interest, because I am a licensed insurance agent.
There was. Thank you, Senator Hannon.
And I'm not a power broker.
The rest of us will make that declaration.
Yes,
Representative Van Vliet had suggested maybe deleting power broker and inserting the governor. You don't want to claim that?
I'll claim it. I said it.
Take out power broker.
Further discussion? If not, the motion then is on the first portion of the Commerce Reorganization contained in House Bill 3341. Call the roll, please.
Representative Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Meeker.
Aye.
Aye. Crowe.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
McGee. Aye.
Aaron. Aye.
Votes aye. Motion carried. I believe that's our agenda. Just under announcements, we'll plan our Saturday schedule. I would hope that members could work diligently up until noon and then call the day. I would like to just linger on for the sake of the staff and our own need to attend personal matters in the afternoon. Do you have a call?
Just please, if we're going to start at 8 or 8:30 in the subcommittee, let's have some courtesy to the other members of letting them know if you're not going to be on time, so we don't stand in a hall till 9:30.
Jeff and I certainly will cover if someone's had reason to late or delayed.
Yep.
Other announcements?
Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes.
I'm wondering if we should try to go into our sub briefly with the Senate taking up at 9?
The Senate members have been excused as per your choice. If one of the subcommittees, two of them, Senator Wires or Trow, if you want to meet, your folks have been excused subject to your discretion.
Our committee will meet, I think.
All right.
Do we need to go to the floor first?
We will verify that by phone, and if we have to run up to get it started, our staff will check that immediately. Otherwise, plan to meet now, and if we have to run up to get started,
we want to meet briefly just to kick a couple bills out.
Good. Quick. Two subs will meet now. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
Joint Ways and Means Full Committee, Tuesday, June 16th, 1987, Hearing Room F, 5 o'clock p.m., Representative Gilmore presiding.
Bills for introduction. Rick Burke, you have a couple possibilities for introduction.
Mr. Chairman, members, in order to expedite the close of session process, we've been asked to introduce two more of the so-called Ways and Means bills, and we've had those ordered up from the Legislative Council and would urge your approval for their introduction as Ways and Means Committee bills.
Is there any discussion by members? Any?
Yeah, there's a question.
Yes.
Of Mr. Burke, how are we going to get out of here if we keep introducing bills?
Right.
Never mind.
Yeah, we were going to tell you.
I think you'll find, Representative Jones, that these two bills could expedite the session.
Oh, all right.
Are these two going to be dealing
Jones
with Ways and Means issues?
Yes, they are Ways and Means bills.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, they'll read exactly as the several others that we've introduced, appropriating blank dollars, eliminating blank dollars,
and starting new programs.
No programs will be mentioned in the bills themselves.
Okay. I am going to vote.
Okay, no objection.
No.
Be introduced. Senator Wires, on other budget bills reported to us at this time, Senate Bill 5502. Would you carry that for us?
Boy, am I glad to talk about this. The committee recommends a general fund budget of $13.1 million. This amount includes second-year funding, which is appropriated to the Emergency Board for allocation after a mid-biennium review of operations and programs. The committee approved, in modified form, a departmental reorganization, which includes the transfer in of the intergovernmental relations programs formerly housed in the Executive Department, consolidation of divisions, and the addition of 10 new staff positions associated with the Governor's Economic Development Program. New programs funds consist of $950,000 to fund fully from the General Fund Small Business Development Centers, $850,000 for 10 new economic development positions, funding for 5 senior business development officers, and salary reclassifications associated with reorganization. $1.570 million for contract services in foreign trade, domestic and foreign business recruiting, and welcome center staffing. The committee was uncomfortable about approving full biennial funding for the economic development related portions of the department's program. Programs appeared to be uncertain, and many key leadership positions, including the directors, have not been filled. Therefore, the committee directed the agency to provide a comprehensive report to the Emergency Board about staff appointments, department organization, contract activities in trade and development, and tourism marketing. Working with this budget was a very rewarding experience because of the fine people that the governor has surrounded this department with. And their candor and hard work in helping us develop this budget. I equated it with a course in embryology in dealing with the formation of this department. I think that it's a good plan to have a second year release of money after we have more specifics of who's been brought on board and so on, so we can have understandings with people who will still be there. Mr. Lohman, the deputy director, we have assurances, is going to be continuing in the department, and he has been very involved throughout. Roger Smith, who has been the acting director and is the chairman of the commission, is remaining with that commission job. And so although he's just left as acting director, he's still going to be available. I think we saw the kind of brilliance that we expected out of the governor and the people that he had there to help us understand this budget, even though some of the positions are yet to be made permanent or filled. We got a restructuring of the and a clarification of the concept of the senior business development officers, and that's reflected in the narrative here. There was some confusion at first about the concern that these people might be reporting directly to the governor, going around the director of the department. That was clarified. There was a great deal of discussion surrounding their physical situs within the area they would be serving, and we got a map of the districts. Representative Hanneman moved the concern about this, where the person would be located in his area, around so many times around the pole that whatever it was in the fable that turned into butter certainly did. But I think we got some good resolutions and good assurances, and I urge you, I vote on this budget.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kopetsky, then Representative Hannah.
Just a couple of quick questions. A clarification on the dollars for the salary range. Actually, this goes to the co-chair. I assume the salary subcommittee actually makes that decision. We've got that in a letter to the governor before the salary subcommittee whether to approve those dollar amounts, increases in the salary.
I can't answer, but Rick Burke can.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm told that the special selective salary increases proposed by the executive are not built into the budgets as approved, but would be absorbed by the agencies if ultimately approved by the legislature.
Yeah, second question, Mr. Co-Chair. Just a clarification on what we're doing with the small business development centers. What funding level?
We obtained the, there's language in this budget report that says that the department will identify a person who is the small business, are you talking about the small business advocate now?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the budget report now.
Well, there will be a designated person who is the small business advocate within the department. We removed the words principally displayed for that, so it's a full job. And we talked with the department about this. They would have preferred additional funding for it, but they gave us assurances that they would carry this out wholeheartedly and not just make this something where they say they've got something like this. And that was one of the many examples of, I thought, very positive and construction approaches to suggestions that were made. From substantive committee members as well as Ways and Means Committee members.
Did the small business lobby advocates and NFIB representatives sign off on this approach?
Yes, NFIB was there and testified on the record. They were very happy, and this was all that they were asking for.
Great.
That they would have preferred to have had the whole boat of the bill, but they understood that we were giving them as much as they could hope for at this stage of the session through a budget.
Senator Hannah.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I apologize to the Senator for not asking this question earlier. You mentioned the welcome centers. The employees that are currently in those centers, what is their standing or position going to be after July 1st? Any temporary employees?
There's a good deal of discussion of that, and I'm fuzzing out a little on it. There was an emphasis on... I don't recall all the details of those discussions. Mr. Jones?
Mr. Chairman, the welcome centers, where it's feasible and appropriate to continue staffing those as state employees, they're going to do so. That's especially in the Southern Oregon area, where it's more appropriate and cost-efficient to do it on a contract basis.
It's fair to say the whole tourism is up in its approach in the budget.
Yes.
Yes, Just one more quick question, Mr. Jones. And those people are going to be full-time employees that are currently in that welcome center, or are they going to be part-time employees after July 1st, or what is their standing? They were given a communication over the telephone that they might possibly be part-time employees after the...
That was brought out, and there was a clarification that was a misunderstanding, and particularly the one in the southern part of the state near your district. Representative Peterson came in and testified, and it was made very clear by the department that they intended to keep those people working there as full-time state employees.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Mr.
Senator
Chairman,
Yee, yes.
I want to know how many international trade offices do we have? I know we have one in Tokyo. Do we have any more other than that?
Senator Meek.
Chairman, I'd like to respond. You're talking about offices. There were enough funds put into the department to cover contracted services, not only in two or three other Far Eastern countries, but also in at least one European country. The purpose is not necessarily an office, but a contracted service to deliver it. the department in no uncertain terms understands the legislative interest in doing that. Mm-hmm.
How much money do we appropriate for that purpose?
Chairman, Senator Yee, for a total of $850,000 for contract services, which the department will allocate for the various initiatives that it identifies as it progresses through the biennium. In addition, there was another $170,000. So the total is for $900,000 for contract services, both for domestic trade recruiting, business recruiting, and international trade and recruiting. That primarily would be initiatives or contacts with individuals to represent the state of Oregon, both in other states and overseas. That's in addition to the staff conference that you have in his office now.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I want to know how much of that is for international trade offices?
That, I think, Mr. Chairman, the answer was given intentionally in a general way because there's going to be flexibility for planning within the department on how those contract services are going to be spent. And that was one of the things, since it wasn't all definitely decided yet without the new director on board, that one of the reasons they'll be coming back probably early in 1988, but at least sometime in the early part of 1988 to give us a report and tell us what their ongoing plans and operations are. And before we release the second year of the budget, they'll be doing that. So we'll be able to have a detailed review of these things and get to know what they've done so far and what they plan to do in the second year of the budget.
And I'd rather see a plan. So I think your question and your concern will be answered.
Right. Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask is I'll be going to the Far East this summer. And I understand there may be some rent-free spaces available in the World Trade Center in Taiwan. And I thought if I know your budget, I can help you coordinate the program if that's the desire of Economic Development Department.
I'm quite sure the department will get personally in touch with you and see that your concern and your help for that agency, I'm sure would be very much appreciated. Mm-hmm.
Taiwan has $68 billion surplus that we can help them coordinate to spend.
Mr. Kirk, would you call a roll, please?
Senators Meeker.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Trow.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Karen.
Aye.
Thorne. Which budget is it? Economic Development Department.
Oh, why'd I come in so soon?
Representatives Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Aye. And Senate Bill 5502 will report to the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senate Bill 5521. Senator Troll, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5521 is the budget for the Department of Environmental Quality. We spent over a month on the DEQ budget. We came to know the meaning of two and two votes in the subcommittee. Gradually, we worked the budget out, and we also dealt with related bills. Senate Bill 5552 is a special hazardous materials program bill, which we'll talk about later, and then Senate Bills 115, 116, 117, 122, all related to this budget. And so the issues surrounding the budget were complicated. The main issue revolved around the fact that the department is engaged in establishing a new hazardous waste program, and the bills and the budget debate focused on that primarily. The recommended budget for the Department of Environmental Quality totals nearly $154 million. The majority of this amount is non-limited relating to the Pollution Control Bond Fund. For the next biennium, anticipated loans from the fund total $79 million, and debt service on existing loans will total $34 million. The remaining approximately $40 million will finance department operations. In the budget are enhancements in the air quality program, which includes a new asbestos control program. We have a bill that relates to that, and Senator Yee will carry that bill. No, Representative Kopetsky will carry that bill here before the committee. That new asbestos control program requires the certification of workers who work with the material. Also, an enhancement is an additional research for alternatives to field burning for the water quality program in excess of $1 million and new federal dollars are included for final delegation from the EPA for construction grants programs for wastewater treatment works. The associated activities include inspection of projects during construction and administrative closeout of completed grant projects. The recommended hazardous and solid waste program is twice the approved program for the current biennium. Several new programs account for this increase, including a new underground tank program, that's Senate Bill 115, a new Oregon Superfund program, that's Senate Bill 122. In addition, the expenditures associated with Senate Bill 116 are included in the budget, which gives the department the statutory authority to receive authorization from the EPA to limit to implement the 1984 amendments to the hazardous waste program. Without this authorization, Oregon will lose authorization for even the current hazardous waste program. The agency management program is slightly increased to provide the program support for the new programs and general workload increases. When you consider the fact that this budget really has a lot of enhancements in the area of hazardous waste. Basically, the rest of the budget is a very slim budget. The administrative part of the budget is slim. If you look at the budget report, you'll notice that in terms of general fund, from the recommendations that were made by the governor, general fund monies were basically reduced in the budget. So, recommend its approval.
Further discussion? Hearing none, Rick, will you call the roll, please?
Senators Meeker. Roberts.
Aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Trow.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Kerens.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Representative Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Aye, and Meeker is excused. Senate Bill 5521 will report to the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senate Bill 5552, Senator Trill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5552 is the governor's new program for hazardous materials. It's the budget for this program. The bill, as amended, continues and expands the hazardous materials survey and information program begun by the state fire marshal during the 1985-87 biennium. And it also finances the state fire marshal's requested hazardous material training and certification program. In addition, it provides financing for a dedicated spill response emergency communication network and staffing at the Poison Control and Drug Information Center for data development and response to inquiries. Financing for the fire marshal's activities and the communication network will be from the fire insurance premium tax. Senate Bill 123, which was a bill that would have helped implement this program, had other ways of financing a more expanded program. But basically what the subcommittee did was to reduce the program to that which could be funded from the balance of the fire insurance premium tax. So the proposal here will utilize approximately half of the $2 million anticipated ending balance in the fund. The staff for the Poison Control and Drug Information Center is to be financed with general fund revenue in the amount of $169,952. A federal fund expenditure limitation is included for the Department of Environmental Quality, and the department is encouraged to apply for federal funds to finance equipment for local response teams and for training funds for local emergency management units. Let me say that this program is underway. It's a reduced program from what the governor had recommended in the budget. Various kinds of fees that were to be established were not established in this bill. Senate Bill 123, which would have established those fees, did not pass out of the subcommittee. And this program is funded this biennium out of the insurance premium tax. That funding will probably not last into the next biennium. And if we want to see a continuation of this program, we're going to find a more permanent way of funding it into the future.
We didn't invent the funding it out of the premium insurance tax. That was in Senate Bill 123 or in Senate Bill 5552. But basically what we did was to use that funding and only that funding for a scaled-down program. Recommend approval.
Okay, just we're under a call, so we'll take the roll. There is no discussion, and we'll go up hopefully for 5 minutes or less and be right back. We apologize, we're under a call. Rick, call the roll, please.
Senator Roberts.
Aye.
Hannon.
Aye.
Trow.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Gee.
Aye.
Karen.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Representative Van Vliet.
Aye.
Hanneman.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Mason.
Aye.
McCracken.
Aye.
Kopetsky.
Aye.
Aye. And Senate Bill 5552 will report to the Senate with a due pass recommendation. We will stand in recess until the House members return.
Aye.
Coming back to order, there are several possibilities.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Cairns.
I would move that we suspend the rules in order to move the agenda in block and permit the members who wish to record their votes as no on any item, so note them after the vote is taken.
Mr. Chairman, we suspended them.
So I made the motion that we suspend them for that purpose.
Mr. Chairman, I support the motion and would suggest that give the members a minute or two to see if there are any objections to any of the budgets or the bills that are coming before us.
I'm not sure about this as a process.
Well, just object.
Well, for the minute, let's do the next test.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah. Senator Baker?
You know, I realize that there is a real desire to be expeditious.
That's.
But in my personal opinion, this is a very bad precedent to set.
Yes.
The next time you make the motion, there'll be a bill in there that's a real turkey, and we'll all regret it. Now, if we have to stay here till 1 o'clock in the morning, I'll be the first one to do it. This is not a good precedent to end block, vote out 48 bills or whatever there is on the agenda.
Senator Cairns not getting unanimous decision on this. We will proceed withdrawing the motion at this time. The next item is Senate Bill 5556. Senator Roberts, the Fairview question.
Mr. Chairman, this is the funding for the state's response to the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act, called TRIPA, lawsuit, and the more recent health care financing agency, Title 19, the certification of Fairview Training Center. This bill appropriates $30 million from the general fund to a dedicated mental retardation account. Of the $30 million, $5 million is for the replacement of lost federal revenue. You know, it's costing us $70,000 a day for every day that we're not certified. And $13 million for gaining recertification of Fairview, $500,000 for comparable improvements at Eastern Oregon Training Center to avoid decertification, and $11.5 million for stabilization of community programs and the population that's dependent on those services. Funds will be applied first to replace the lost federal revenue and regain Fairview certification. The plan adds 726 positions at Fairview to resolve immediate health and safety issues, and as 300 residents transfer to community programs to meet active treatment requirements. Once Fairview is recertified, the remaining funds in the account will be used to improve community services, including case management staff ratios, direct care salaries, and opportunities for persons on wait lists. The bill also includes narrowly constructed temporary exemptions from the state expenditure and state employee position limitations. As of today, negotiations haven't been completed with the federal government. The plan seems to be the best judgment and professional judgment's opinion of what's required to meet constitutional requirements. And the approval of this measure will reaffirm to federal officials that Oregon is committed to correcting conditions at Fairview within the resources that are available under state law. I would urge the adoption of 5556.
Further discussion?
Is there any objection to suspension of the roll call? Any opposition to the motion to move this bill to the Senate to do pass recommendation? Hearing none, unanimous consent. Senate Bill 115, Senator Turtle. I've seen that number so long.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I wasn't sure where you were going with that. Senate Bill 115 is a bill that's necessary because of federal action. The Federal Resource Conservation and Recovery Act was recently amended by the federal Congress to include provisions for regulating underground storage tanks. Senate Bill 115 will allow Oregon to administer the program rather than the federal government, the EPA. So the bill was necessary for Oregon to assume primacy in the regulation of underground storage tanks. The bill authorizes the EQC to adopt necessary rules to gain interim and final operation of the underground tank program from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. These rules may include performance standards for leak detection systems, inventory control, tank testing, record maintenance, installation and retrofitting requirements, permit requirements, and others. The Commission may also adopt a program which regulates the individuals providing underground tank installations and removal, retrofitting, testing, and inspection services. Your committee adopted several amendments to the bill, but perhaps the most significant was to limit the fees to be charged to a tank owner to $25 per tank per year during 1987-89 biennium, and then to reduce the charge to $20 beginning July 1, 1989. Also, an amendment was included to require review of the proposed rule requiring an owner or permittee to demonstrate and maintain financial responsibility prior to its adoption. The plan to address the insurance provisions of the bill must also be reviewed prior to implementation. Mr. Chairman, just one thing about the fees. We're calling for a $20 a tank fee or $25 a tank fee for this biennium, reduced to $20 for the next. We're hoping that $20 will be adequate. It's possible that there are a lot more tanks out there that would qualify to pay the fee than have now been estimated. It is possible, however, that this will not be adequate, and the agency may have to come to the next Ways and Means Committee during the next session of the legislature to again discuss the adequacy of the tank fee. But we think $20 would be adequate for the next biennium. So I recommend approval.
Further discussion.